Welcome to Leverage Masters, airing weekly on Tuesdays at 12 Eastern and on demand on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. Leverage Masters hosts Jack Humphrey and Gina Gaudio-Graves discuss leverage strategy with guest leveragists. Be sure to subscribe to Leverage Masters in your favorite podcatcher for great tips and case studies on using leverage to achieve your biggest goals much faster.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Leverage Masters. I am your co-host, Dr. Gina Gaudio-Grace, the co-founder of Divizio, the affiliate network for companies doing good. We have a fantastic show lined up for everyone today. We have my co-host and show producer, Andrea Adams-Miller, the founder of the Red Carpet Connection, joining us. Hello, Andrea.
Hi, I'm calling today from Wimberley, Texas, the middle of nowhere near Austin.
You're out and about again.
I am out and about again. This is my first trip out of the house.
and it's lovely.
I came out here. Wimberley is absolutely gorgeous. I had no idea that I'd be in this absolutely gorgeous scenery. The people who live here who are hosting me have this 14 acres of just gorgeousness. There's a dry rock bed, like a creek bed, and they have two baby deer twins who've been scattering about, and some foxes that have dashed here and there, and they have a pet turtle in an enclosure. And so even though I'm here for business, I feel like I'm at a private spa sanctuary retreat.
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, enjoy.
So what I'm doing, Gina, is super fun. So I have traveled down here. Well, actually, I had been wanting to do this for a while, but because of the restrictions and weird stuff, I thought, we'll kind of blow it off for a little bit. But as the COVID numbers are going back up, there's talk about limiting things again, and I didn't want anything to limit me or my business or my clients anymore, and especially not my nonprofit, the Keep Smiling Movement. So I had heard that Texas was closing all their bars again and decreasing their how many people can be in a restaurant, and that the borders, Mexico for Texas, were going to be closed. So I hopped on a plane and flew down here. So I'm meeting with my business guy who is redoing all of my systems for my business, and then we're going to do them for the Keep Smiling Movement. So I am totally revamping everything, because if we're going to be continued to be locked in, I decided that instead of complaining about anything, I was going to be a solution to the problem. So I'm now creating my own platforms and own virtual stages and opportunities so that my clients and, you know, all the people who we talk to have an opportunity to still do business and have an amazing life. So that's what I'm out to do.
That's awesome. Keep me posted on that and let me know if there's anything I can do to help you with it.
I will. I will. And we have a really fun guest on today. It looks like Siri did a name correction on me, so I will do that for him. His name is Jess Stainbrook, and he has an extensive background in strategic planning, nonprofit management, and brand marketing. He currently serves as the executive director and vice president for Invisible Disabilities Association, which is an amazing, amazing organization that really, we'll talk about it quite a bit during the show, but it has such an excellent capacity to take care of people and help them be able to be recognized and show up in the world and have so much service for them. Jess also teaches communication, visual storytelling, and digital media at CCU's College of Undergraduate Studies, the School of Humanities and Social Services. And he's known for building successful media teams and championing significant visual storytelling efforts through innovative programming and strategic business initiatives. He's been in the broadcast television field, and he's received 8 Emmy Awards and 29 nominations. His clients include MTV, ESPN, PBS, Discovery Channel, A&E, and many others. So there's so much more about him. Like, he's been with the Olympics, the World Cup, Formula One, NASCAR, NFL, Super Bowl, and he has 8 Emmys for the work that he's done in the world. One of them for executive producer 7 Days in Utopia, a major motion picture with the Academy Award winners Robert Duvall and Melissa Leo. So just amazing stuff. So please, I mean, if I could, well, I can stand up and give you a standing ovation, but it's just me. So Jess, yay! Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is interesting. I'm curious to hear what we're going to talk about.
Well, you know, I've had the pleasure of talking to you multiple times, and I do want to make sure that we cover those major things that the whole world needs to know about you. And at the same time, I'd like to take a deeper dive, because the more I talk to you, the more cool things I find out. And I'm like, wow, let's explore Jess's awesomeness even more, because the world needs to know about you. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if we're talking about leveraging things in life, I mean, it's interesting. You said you're on your first travel trip since we've been in lockdown. My wife and I were actually on our first travel trip last week, leveraging some friendships and doing some stuff. I think, Andrea, you're aware, but Jeannie, maybe you don't know. We're actually preparing through the Invisible Disabilities Association to host what we think is going to be the world's largest online relationship summit. And so our travel last week was actually to go interview, you might know the name John Gray, who did the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And we also talked with Warren Farrell, who he's got a new book out called The Boy Crisis. And so we're actually gathering all of these cool talks by all these people that have volunteered to be part of this huge event. And then it happens in September, the 14th to the 19th. And on that last day, we're actually doing what we hope is going to be the world's largest online date night. So we're going to have a comedian, we're going to have some music, and we're going to have a feature film, which you mentioned, 7 Days of Utopia. We're hoping to be able to play that one for everybody to watch that evening. But the whole idea is to say, in the midst of this time when there's been so much anxiety and stress, and, you know, we really felt it was an important thing to give people some tools and some understanding of, hey, in proximity, in close quarters, amidst everything that's going on, how do we continue to love one another and to have great relationships? So yeah, we're really pressing through this thing. It's going to be a blast.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the couple who's hosting me here, their son actually lives next door on this property. And they've been together, I think, 34 years, and they live out here in the middle of nowhere, have, you know, neighbors that are far away. And in observing them, they remind me of The Notebook. They both are, I believe he's retired as well. And just to see them, like how they talk to each other, and how, like, he'll come behind her shoulder and talk to her, whisper in her ear when she's doing dishes, or they'll cook dinner together, and then they'll sit in the hot tub at night on the back porch. And I think now they're out sitting on the patio, you know, having their coffee together or whatever. And they're just so adorable. And it was very interesting to me to think, like, wow, they're so at peace with, like, I asked them, like, because I'm so used to a whirlwind life. I have tons of activities and tons of business things. And their son is the same way. He and I we work like 24/7. And I asked them what all they like to do, and they're like, nothing. And they're so happy in it, and they're so cute together.
Yeah.
And so it's really been a fun observation to see how different people and different couples engage and interact. And yeah, Dr. John Gray is a super amazing. I've had the pleasure of sharing the stage with him and talking with him in the past at a couple different events. So he always is a joy. And he does other things too that people may not know about. Actually, I haven't had him on Leverage Masters.
Sure.
So Gina, we'll make that happen. I'll reach out to him and make that happen. Yeah. He also talks about ADHD.
The Notebook.
Yeah.
You mentioned The Notebook. Nicholas Sparks, we're actually doing, so the first hour is when we have our speakers. We're doing two each session, 1 hour session every day. And then the second hour, we're actually doing like Q&A and a bunch of other stuff. But we've gathered all of these romance novelists and writers. And Nicholas Sparks, I think, is one of the guys that's going to join us for one of the second hours just to talk about, you know, when you write this way, where does it come from? Where does it? So that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, that'll be super amazing. I mean, that, you know, once people know about that too, your stuff's going to really blossom, and it'd be fun. Have you guys already looked at doing a Guinness Book of World Records for date night, virtual date night?
We have, actually. Yeah, we have a cup in on that right now, and we'll see what happens.
That sounds super fun. So why don't you tell everybody what Invisible Disabilities is all about, since we're talking about the relationship seminar related to it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the Invisible Disability Association started back in 96, and the idea came about from the CEO and founder, Wayne Cannell. His wife deals with MS. She has Lyme disease, some other things, some autoimmune things. And so she had kind of coined this term, invisible disability. You know, I have an invisible disability. In other words, it's something that you can't see because of an assistive device, but it still affects what happens every day. And so they just kind of moved forward from there. And so obviously been in place for a while. I joined them about 2 years ago. Again, in your little intro there of me kind of branching out to help nonprofits and different groups like that, really in strategic planning and moving forward in new ways based on the skill sets I have in storytelling, media, marketing, stuff like that. And so, you know, Wayne was a friend and we had met years and years before. And so I just came on board to kind of help them take things to the next level and have learned so much in the last 2 years, actually. You know, you think you know a lot about folks that are dealing with invisible disabilities. And my goodness, there's so many other things going on. I mean, invisible disabilities really represents, you know, it could be a cognitive, it could be a neurological, it could be a mental health or a physical health issue. It could be chronic pain or chronic illness. I mean, it might be something like I said, MS or diabetes or epilepsy. As we talk about people with disabilities and invisible disabilities, it's literally the world's largest minority group. And that's something that people don't recognize. And it's a group that anybody can enter or exit at any time. In other words, you might have a temporary invisible disability where you're dealing with something. And so, there's all these different nuances of it. What we do is we're out there really raising awareness, helping to advocate for these folks and creating different programs and legislation measures and initiatives that really help forward the idea behind helping these people as they're living with all these various invisible disabilities.
Fantastic. It's beautiful. One of the things that I love the best is that you have these ID badges now that people can wear to be identified as having an invisible disability should they desire for that to be known. So that way, like if they go to a store or a gathering, then someone there would be, you know, eventually, hopefully you'll get everybody trained so that the world recognizes this badge. That's my hope for you. And then they'll see, oh, that person is wearing that badge and they have an invisible disability. That means they're wearing the badge. They would like some assistance or help or open to being asked. And so will you tell more about the initiative for that?
Yeah, for sure. And I love talking about this. You know, it started with us creating some legislation. We call it the National Disability ID. And, it started with us creating some legislation that would, like you said, allow for some type of symbol or designated marker on government IDs, including driver's license, for people that had invisible disabilities. And again, what it goes to is the, you know, currently when you see that wheelchair icon, that represents people that have accessibility issues. And when it was implemented 30 years ago, it just kind of has become the general disability symbol. And it still works very well, but the whole idea is to say that, you know, if you have an invisible disability, that interaction might be different in the case of, you know, as a matter of fact, our legislation came out of a person in Ohio who was driving. He got pulled over, and when he handed his license to the law enforcement officer, he did not make eye contact. I can tell you that that puts those guys on high alert because they're not sure what's going on. The gentleman was kind of fumbling around in his car, and they thought he was drunk. Pulled him and handcuffed him and just, you know, held him. He would be safe. And, well, it turns out this guy has autism. And that's a perfect example to say, you know, had he had this symbol on his license, that entire interaction may have gone very differently. And so we went about providing House bill language that people that or the legislations could put this into legislation, make it law. Alaska was the first state to have passed it. We currently have it in a bunch of other states preparing to be passed. But what we found out and really took off with this idea of what you had mentioned, Andrea, let's do the grassroots version. Let's actually create a tag that doesn't have to be legislated, that just identifies and has this symbol that people recognize as the invisible disability symbol. And so we have put that out there, and we're in the midst of creating all kinds of training programs as well that would include law enforcement, first responders, EMT, educators. We want to expand it to include businesses and retailers and restaurants. I mean, the whole idea, like you said, is that, you know, you could walk into a restaurant and someday we envision that the there'll be a sign on the door that says, you know, National Disability ID friendly. And if you're wearing your tag, again, all of these things are voluntary. The marker on the driver's license is a voluntary disclosure. So if you don't want it, you don't have to have it. But again, it's something that if you want it and you think it's going to help. So that's why the grassroots effort is you can wear this tag, you walk into a place, and hopefully somebody would immediately see the tag and say, hey, how can I help? And again, if you don't feel like you need it that day or if things are different, you take it off, you put it in your pocket or put it in your purse. So that's really how it's working. And yeah, we're just plugging through. I mean, it's online currently. You can go get the disability ID card. It's a hard plastic card. It has the disability ID symbol on one side, invisible disability symbol, and then it has identifying information on the other. So it has a picture. It also has a code that in case something happened and, you know, an EMT or C needed something, they could put their phone up against that and it would take them to a page to help them get through that information. It also has an emergency contact number so that if, again, something had happened, you know, somebody could call your emergency contact and hopefully get some more info. So, yeah, really just trying to take tangible steps for helping people through this whole thing of living with invisible disabilities.
Fantastic. So I am curious. I've never asked this before. So do they have to show some kind of qualification or doctors, so forth, in order to get the ID?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In the for the legislative side of things, yes. It's much like the placard if you were to get one for your car. And so we've added a few things to the legislation that so the ID symbol is one thing. We've also added a database that follows the car. The whole idea of having it on your license is, hey, what if you're not driving your own car, right? And so, but if it has it on the license in a database as an identifier, that's another thing that will help law enforcement. If you got pulled over, they could pull that up and say, hey, you know, be aware that there's somebody in this car has some type of invisible disability, and it may affect the interaction. On a placard, it's the same way. You do have to have some kind of verified source from a medical doctor or another doctor that proves it. But once you're in the system, you don't have to reprove it. So as far as our grassroots app, we don't have a requirement per se, but you are signing off that you your own affidavit that says you do have something that fits into these categories. Again, it's a voluntary disclosure. So we're starting that process of saying, you know, let's get something out there. You know, don't get me wrong. There might be some people who choose to get one and use it incorrectly and they don't have something. Hey, this, you know, people are going to misuse systems all over the place. I mean, you see
sure.
it happening with the placards and things like that. As a matter of fact, that's one of the biggest conversations we have or issues that happens is that somebody pulls up and parks in a disability parking space and walks from their car to the mall. Well, that just sets everybody off thinking that they don't deserve it. They don't, that, you know, they don't have some disability, and that's not true. I mean, many of the people that we talk with and that our constituents have told us stories is that, you know, a police car will pull up and block them in to say, hey, I just saw you walk into the mall. Well, but you have an approved placard and it's for something. And so we really are going out of our way to create the certified training that people have a better understanding of what exactly is an invisible disability and how does it play out in our culture today and how should we react, you know?
Yeah, that is very helpful because that the wheelchair emblem, while originally created for wheelchair accessibility, now that we have other you know, medications and products and braces and other invisible disabilities that we didn't even know that people had then, people have mobility, and so they don't need a wheelchair. Or maybe they don't need a wheelchair until they get in the store. But regardless of that, it doesn't matter whether they need a wheelchair or not. They still can't walk from the further end of the parking lot. They still need that closeness yep. accessibility. And so that's been, the difficult thing for people to see because they see the wheelchair emblem and think, no wheelchair, no park. And that's
right. We're
not
actually
what
dealing,
that means.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Ohio is the first state that we are asking for legislation that allows for a placard that has a different color. Like, I don't know if you're aware, the blue placard is a permanent placard. The red placard is a temporary placard. We're actually proposing
yes.
an orange placard that shows that it's an invisible disability.
Nice.
So that, again, the whole idea is that, you know, if somebody pulled into that spot and you could look, well, it means that there's no assistive device that's readily seen. It's an invisible disability. So, yeah, we are working on those components, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of things that the ADA requirements actually do cover as far as invisible disabilities, but many HR departments aren't aware of it or don't take it into consideration. And that's, you know, that those are a lot of the groups that we speak to on a regular basis, you know, college diversity groups, HR folks in corporations and stuff, just giving them more information and understanding of, hey, how do we care for people that have invisible disabilities and what are some of the positive ways that we can come around them to help them out and without other people thinking that, oh, they're just getting some kind of favor because they can't see something. Right. So yeah,
right.
It's interesting.
Gina, did you want to chime in? Gina had a really life-threatening car accident in her past that mm-hmm. left her disabled, where she was in a wheelchair and had complete care for years. Gina turns her mic on mute so that way we don't get double feedback. So let me just interrupt me when you're on, Gina, and we'll have you chime in. And, you know, because she's often – oh, good. Please chime in.
So I have been disabled for 24 years, and I am considered totally and permanently disabled. But unless I have my walker with me, and I have it with me probably 90% of the time, people don't always
sure.
realize that I'm disabled. So I love this
yep.
idea because it is a huge issue for a lot of us. You know, if I'm just sitting in a chair somewhere, people look at me and they go, oh, yeah, you're not a disabled woman at all. But then they see me get up with my walker. And I recently got a stroller for my little puppy because he actually has a disability too. So So normally he's been riding around in my walker basket. And I wanted to get the stroller to give him more room so that I didn't feel as disabled. But the few times I've used the stroller, people actually look at me really weird when I park in the handicap place. If I get the walker out of the back of the trunk, they don't look at me nearly as weird. So I get this in ways that not all of our listeners probably do. So what other suggestions do you have for someone like me for how the association can really help us?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you bring up a good point is that, and it's, again, it's a very common statement for people to hear someone say, but you looked good.
Right, and exactly.
About, and Gina does look good. Look, Gina always has her hair and her makeup done. She's always smiling. So Gina looks fantastic. And so they don't have any reason. They don't look, she does look good. Let me just put it that way. So there you go, Gina.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrea.
No, for sure. Well, again, a lot of our efforts, Gina, are around the whole idea of raising awareness. And in other words, bringing it, forward so that people understand the campaign that we just created really does take that and puts faces on different disabilities and has a little statement, I feel safer when I ride public transportation and I have my disability ID on because if something happens, I have faith in humanity that they would help me kind of thing. So it really is getting the word out. But also, there's a whole level of patience that we need to create with people that don't know what it is or how to react. Or our biggest thing is about believing. That really is the first, that is the starting place is you have to believe that are living with invisible disabilities and be willing to hear them out and to understand what's going on. That's, there's so many times that different things are said that hurt people's feelings just because people don't know any better and they don't really understand it. I mean, the irony in all of it is that most of us at one point or another, especially as we get older, are going to experience some kind of invisible disability in some form or fashion. And then we'll have a different understanding and it may change the way we look at it. So, yeah.
And especially with our aging population, our population is getting older and older and older. At least the vast majority are. So, it's going to be an even bigger issue in the coming years. And with been going on with the protests and the riots and whatnot, all related to race, I keep thinking to myself every time I hear it on the news, and why are they not doing anything for those of us that are disabled? Because there really is a lot of discrimination against those of us that have invisible disabilities. Huge numbers of people.
Well, it's interesting. The COVID lockdown has really opened people's eyes to the situation that many of the people living with invisible disabilities, what their lives are like. In other words, there's days, weeks, months that these folks can't get out of their house because of whatever they're dealing with and have to figure stuff out. And so it really has raised awareness and a sensitivity to, oh my gosh, I had no idea, Well, now we have a little bit better understanding, because we're stuck in our houses and we have to rely on different services and things to help us out to get through stuff. So it's really changed the conversation a bit just based on what we're dealing with now. And again, our whole idea behind the Relationship Summit, we call it the Love Ideas Summit, was really around, bringing this kind of information to light to say, well, how can we deal with each other better? And the word ideas in that, the Love Ideas Summit, ideas actually stands for Invisible Disabilities Education, Awareness, and Support. So,
I love it.
We're really excited to offer this here in mid-September and to see how it goes for everybody.
Andra, we need to make sure that we introduce him to Sherry Watson. Sherry Watson is the author of the Americans with Disabilities Act here in the U.S. But she does an awful lot to support people with disabilities as well as to support nonprofit and for-profit businesses. She would be a great speaker on the summit.
Yeah, for sure. We'd love to have her. My goodness, that would be incredible.
I mean, yeah, she's been a guest here on Leverage Masters, so we can definitely get her in touch with you easily.
And tell me her name again.
Sherry Watson. And her affiliate/JV manager's name is Erica. That last name is escaping me, but bear with me while I get it for you. It is Erica. Come on, Erica. Of course, I put her name in here as Erica, but not the last
name. Let's do it when we're off the air. I talk to Jess all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So,
it'll be good. And, she's an amazing woman. She has done so many instrumental things in the world to really help people with disabilities and make things amazing. So it's been fantastic. And you'll have to forgive me here. I got a bit of background noise. Let me make that quieter. So
probably me.
How, where do we go from here? You know, like you guys are doing these amazing things, creating all of this. Oh, you know, what is the future bigger picture, you know, 5 years down the road?
Oh, for the Invisible Disabilities Association? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We're actually working on all kinds of things. We have a very high-level green initiative that has to do with working with contractors and home builders that allows for using more eco-friendly materials that don't have as much off-gassing. You know, if you build a new home, just the OSB, the glue that they use in the floorboards and the sheetrock and all that stuff has all kinds of chemicals that are coming out, usually for a couple of years. And there's actually some great groups out of Canada that are making some products that we were working on a model home here in Colorado to see if we could get that built and so people could actually experience it. And we're trying to get those kind of like the gluten-free thing, you know. If you put gluten-free on it, they could raise the price and double it, triple it, quadruple it. But we're trying to get it so that it's equal with everything else that's going on. We're also working on the thing what we call the Ida Cares mobile app. And it allows for it's like a personality assessment, if you will. And it allows for caregivers and care receivers to understand each other better, both in a professional and a personal situation, where a caregiver can understand how a person, based on their personality, likes to get their care. So, you know, let's say Mrs. Johnson is in a care facility. And she likes to talk about family. So, you know, that's the first thing that the caregiver might do before the treatment. You know, you might get somebody else that, no, just give me the treatment and get out of here kind of a thing. So it really does identify those things back and forth and allow for, again, the caregiver and the care receiver to have a much better understanding of how to work together based on their personality type.
Amazing. Going to be absolutely amazing. So let's do a little bit of a shift, too, because I want to – we'll probably come back to Invisible Disabilities just because it's such a beautiful organization. But I'd love to know more – have our audience know more about you. And, you know, you've had 28 Emmy nominations. So it's obvious that you've been doing some pretty creative, amazing work that people have recognized all over the world. And I'd love you to share that experience and how that all came to pass.
Oh, sure. Well, for the most part, my entire career was spent in the broadcast media and movie world. I left my real job, if you will, in 2006 to start a nonprofit to help other nonprofits. And it's how I kind of got into all of this stuff that I'm doing now. my philosophy around that is, you know, there's a time when you need to move from success to significance, and really pour your heart into things that matter. And not saying that people don't while they're doing things that are successful, but sometimes that transition is this, we call it like the halftime thing, right? Like we're moving to this other place after halftime to change the way we look at things. But yeah, I grew up in a pretty creative family. Started my first company when I was still in college, and it took off, and all those clients that you listed off were all the clients of mine that included MTV and ESPN and all those folks. And yeah, spent a lot of time bouncing around the globe, shooting different sports things and working on different documentary kinds of things, which is where I got my Emmys. And then I launched about 15 years ago or so. I launched into the movie and feature film world, and that changed some other things and got a chance to do that stuff. I'm regularly at the Super Bowl. I do a program that's inspirational for youth around talking to the players and the coaches about, you know, what's most important in life. And again, really creating inspirational content that changes the way people think about what they do or the players that they're seeing on the field. You know, my whole goal was, if you're going to put a player on a pedestal for him being good at a sport, well, nobody's made of, know what his priorities are, know what he values in life. And so all of those programs have been very encouraging. You know, I work with people like Tony Dungy and, you know, Tim Tebow and guys like that. So, yeah, it's a regular way to encourage people, again, how to have positive role models and things in their life that help them through stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been quite an interesting time. And I can't help myself. I'm always involved in some kind of media project. As a matter of fact, with Invisible Disabilities Association, we're working on a project with a producer out of Oregon called Unfixed. And it's a documentary that features a bunch of people living with various disabilities that have really, you know, a lot of folks in the disability space are seeking answers and cures. And I mean, who wouldn't? That's something we want to know, right? And this particular documentary is about a bunch of people who have lived with certain things for a long time, and they're just recognizing that they're probably never not going to have this. And so how do they get on with their life, accepting where they are and how to live with the particular disability that they have? So yeah, Kimberly Warner is the producer director on that, and we touched base, and she didn't know my background in film when we got together. It was really funny. She had just reached out to Invisible Disabilities Association to say, hey, would you be willing to help us promote it or this and that? And then once she found out my background, we got much more involved with her and really been helping through the process of, you know, making this thing go. So, but, you know, for the most part, everything is kind of shut down as far as TV and movie production since the COVID stuff happened. So, yeah, like I said, my wife and I were on the road for the first time last week out shooting, but it had been, you know, a couple of months since we had done anything because we weren't allowed. So, yeah, we're still trying to be sensitive to everything that's going on there and, you know, wearing our masks when we need to and being cautious in where we're going and being tested and stuff. So, yeah, just taking it a step at a time, I guess, as everybody should.
Sounds, you know, just amazing, you know, the things that you've been able to do and produce and make happen. And will you talk a little bit about SSBN?
Oh, FSBN? Sure.
Yes.
So F, like Foxtrot. Yes, FSBN. About, oh my goodness, I guess back in 2014, 2013, somewhere in there, we had been, so I've been to the Super Bowl for, shoot, I don't know, 14 of them, but yeah, and had been working on these different programs. I mean, basically, we talked to people about, again, what's most important in life, and more often than not, that conversation immediately leads back to faith. And it's just the way it is. I mean, when people stand on something, it usually starts with a strong faith in something, right? So we started this thing called SSPN, kind of as a joke. I had done a bunch of work for ESPN, excuse me, and the S really was Faith and Sports Programming Network, so FSPN. And we kind of started it as a joke, but we decided at one of the Super Bowls to brand it and literally put it on everything that we were doing just to see if anybody was paying attention. And darn if the thing didn't take off and everybody recognizes it. So we're known. I mean, as a matter of fact, people know us when we show up that, well, you're the guys that do the inspirational, encouraging content. Yep, that's us, you know. We tell great stories about meaningful lives and, you know, good character, good role models in sports. So, yeah, that's actually been a lot of fun and allowed us to, again, meet some incredible people. I also have served as a pro sports chaplain, you know, work with athletes in action. And so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff based off of who I am and what I've experienced in life that have brought me to a place that my faith is really important to me. And it's the way that I try to live my life. So, yeah, it's been a blessing, if you will, for being able to be in that space and be somebody who can tell those kinds of stories in a bigger way.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So do you mind sharing, like going back and sharing with people when you were faced with a challenge and how you were able to overcome it?
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of people that know me know that my life took a drastic turn the summer of 1989. My company got hired to cover the first ever Inside Communist Russia international athletic event besides the Olympics. It was an ultra marathon, and teams from all over were basically coming to Russia to run together 1,000 miles across Siberia in 15 days. So ultra marathoners are the guys that run, you know, 50 to 100 miles a day for multiple days. So this was going to be a big deal. And because it was, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, if you will, it was a very special event, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And the short story is that in the midst of that, there were a few guys on the Russian team that really didn't look like ultramarathoners. And what we found out, and I grew up as an athlete, you know, played soccer in college and beyond that, and still coach and everything. But, you know, there's a certain way that things go between athletes, that you trust each other and stuff. And like I said, these four guys on the Russian team didn't look like they were the same kind of ultra marathon athletes that everybody else was. And it turns out they were KGB assigned to watch us, my buddy and I, because they thought we were CIA. And like I said, the short version of that story is that in the midst of this race, we were actually taken. And, you know, questioned as to whether we were spies or not. And when I was released, it really did change the way I looked at things, because I think at any time when your life is on the line, or if you're not really sure of the outcome of what something might be, it gives you that pause to question. And for the first time, I, you know, kind of did that thing that you see in every movie, you know, where somebody looks up and goes, hey, if God is real and he shows up and helps me, I will definitely think differently about the way I live. And that actually happened. And it was tangible enough that I could tell that it wasn't me and it wasn't some mistake or an accident. And it literally did change everything for me and put me on this track as far as my media and the way that I told stories that changed the way that I look at them and really wanted to have positive influence on our culture to make a difference. And so, yeah, from that day forward, that's kind of how things took off for me. It was pretty interesting. And it's impacted every part of my life as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a business leader. Whether, you know, I say it out loud or not, those principles are very important to me, of having integrity and being truthful and trustworthy and honest in the dealings that we do in anything. So, yeah, it's something that I believe enough that I talk about it, and like I said, it's what we pour into everything that we do.
Fantastic. You know, it's beautiful that you were able to overcome that situation and that it, you know, you created positive for yourself out of it, and it helps, you know, renew your lease on what's important to you. And certainly, and that you share those values with people as you see fit. So, you know, I find that very commendable, and not everybody has that opportunity. And it sounds funny, like we call that like I would call that a negative thing, an opportunity, but sometimes it takes crazy stuff to help us figure out what's really most important to us. So
yeah,
how did your wife react to all of that?
Well, interestingly enough, I wasn't married at the time, and I didn't really grow up in a house with faith or, you know, any kind of religious background, and so wasn't really aware of that. I didn't actually meet my wife until after all of that stuff happened, and actually a very funny story that we like to tell is within the first month, something interesting had happened. We had moved to Colorado and kind of moved out to the high prairie just to kind of enjoy things. We moved from Philadelphia, so, you know, inner city life to ranch country life. And it was back in the day when we had phones that were still on the wall, right? And we were in this new house. We had just got married, and the phone rings. And when I picked it up, somebody in Russian said, "Hey, I'm looking for so-and-so." And so I, in Russian, said, "I think you have the wrong number." There was this brief conversation, well, but it wasn't in English. And I didn't realize it. Turned to look at my wife, and her face is completely white. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" And she's like, "What just happened?" I'm like, "What do you mean, what just happened?" Like, I didn't even think about it. And it was really funny. And she's just like, "Are you a spy?" I mean, she's literally shaking. Like, "Are you a spy or something? Like, what is going on?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, no. And you know, it's interesting because for many years after that experience, I really didn't talk about it. Because it was traumatic. And granted, it had a positive outcome on who I became, but it was still something that was hard to deal with. And over the years, it has become more of my story to say, it's like you said, Andrea, is sometimes it takes something huge to shake up your world to let you see literally how blessed you are or how privileged we are in the context of one, where we live as a nation and how we may have grown up or the opportunities that have been afforded to us. And so, I mean, it's everything that is on the line right now. It's why we're in the midst of all the things that we're talking about now and why there's protests, why there's people that are upset. I mean, it's a big deal. You know, some things have happened, and how do we deal with that? And so the question is, will you deal with it in a positive way or a negative way? I mean, we still have to live in this country and do what we're going to do, but, you know, we have to understand that our history is important to know what happened so we don't repeat it and we can be better at stuff. So it's the same way I look at my life. You know, I know what I did before this thing happened to me, and I know how it changed me. And so I can still look back at the old Jess and go, "I don't want to do that again." And it's a good reminder for me. I mean, if you remember in the Bible, you know, the Israelites used to stones, and they would do that specifically to say, "This is a remembrance of what happened. You know, let us not forget." And so that's, I mean, when you look at monuments and everything that's going on today, you know, that's what they're there for, is to say, "We don't want to do that again," right? Or that's something that went really well, right?
History is important to me, and monuments are important to me. And I'm like, I get it. Like, this probably all happened back when they destroyed all those Greek and Roman, you know, statues and stuff that are all crumbled on the ground now. And, you know, and maybe at the time that was happening too, and they didn't like those people or what they stood for. But in destroying those things, I get it that those people in destroying them feel as if that they feel validated. But that's just a few select people who take it upon themselves to relish in that joy and I don't know if the word joy is probably not correct, but in the moment, in that heat of getting out that anger or revenge or whatever it is on a non-physical form. Yeah. But for me, all of that stuff, you know, and even I even had said, like, even the stuff that was from from Germany and from the Holocaust and all of that. Mm-hmm. Those items and those things, very interesting, even in that situation, if we don't remember it and we don't have things to show children and stuff so that they understand the realization of it, that this really did happen, if those museums and stuff weren't there for that memory, then it doesn't give us an opportunity to learn from it and see it and experience it. And even it had dawned on me, I had a student once bring something in for a class, like for a show and tell, and it was an item from a Nazi war camp that, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, you need to get this home and hide this and get insurance on this, because it was made out of silver and everything. It was absolutely beautifully handcrafted. What it stood for was totally inappropriate in my world now, but at the time, that's what was happening in that country. And, you know, I realized this was a museum artifact. This thing needed to be taken care of. And it really was, it dawned on me at that time that the person who crafted that, while it was crafted for a reason that most of us don't want to ever happen again. You know, we want people to be loved on and taken care of. The person was either forced to probably make that, like they probably didn't have a choice in it, like especially in that time and era. So there's just other things to play in that. Like who made those monuments? Like, did they make them by choice because they were supportive of that, or were they forced to make them? You know, there's backstories to all of even the creation and the art of how those came to be. I don't know. To me, if we look at that art and we look at the history and then we use that as a reflection of learning more about the story and where people were at mentally, and you know, then we could maybe avoid those situations. But that's my opinion. So my soapbox.
Yeah, no, for sure. History teaches us a lot. And if you wipe it out, well, then you're doomed to repeat it. And probably the really bad part of it, you know. So yeah, let's pay attention.
Well, right, too. And then I was kind of laughing because I'm like, even in the, if we don't plan the destruction of something, then it costs even more to clean it up and do whatever. And I'm like, and now right now we're offsetting monies that need to go to other things because now we have immediate cleanup and so forth. And so there's just so many levels of things that are happening that's why I wish people would not react in anger immediate gut reaction, emotional response. So that's one of the things for the Keep Smiling movement. I've been very present about what more can we create for a curriculum to help remove that hurt, pain, and anger that people are holding inside that can be released so that they can address it in a civil way that still gets their voice heard and actually creates positive solutions that would be more help more people at a wider cast. So that's kind of where
sure.
I'm at with that.
Yep.
And I could see people with invisible disabilities, loving programs like that too, because they've been bullied and made fun of. We just did a program the other day, and the people were talking about how terribly they were bullied for having both physical disabilities and invisible disabilities that caused them, even though they're invisible disabilities, they miss school a lot and things like that, where they were made fun of. And so then you hold those emotions. And so what haven't I asked you about that you would love to share?
Oh, goodness. I think you have asked me everything that I would want to share. Like I said, I'm most excited for what we're working on currently with this relationship summit, because I think people would resonate with the encouragement that all of these speakers going to give people. And, you know, it's a short piece every day. I mean, you know, you'd love to be able to sit in a room with somebody that has this kind of deep knowledge about really, you know, what's at the core of our relationships and why they go well sometimes and why they go badly other times. I mean, that's something that, you know, we all want to be better at who we are, I think. And, whatever that looks like, is, you know, how do we, it's like you said before, is how do we create an environment that we can love one another? I mean, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself, right? That's a pretty powerful statement. And if it were just that simple, you know, and it's not, because we're all broken and we all have certain things that we're dealing with, and it creates stress for different people in different ways. And again, what the reaction is. And so, yeah, our hope is that this week really is an opportunity for people to take a step back, learn more about themselves, and then again, how to, you know, share things with their partner, their spouse, their family, their friends, whatever, and really deal with what we're going through these days.
Fantastic. I mean, yeah, this next thing is just so exciting. I'm excited for you as well. And then how can other people find out more about you and Visible Disabilities? How would you like them to do that?
For sure. If you go to invisibledisabilities.org, that's our webpage, and we have all kinds of resources there, free things that you can print off and hand to people if you're dealing with something yourself or if you want people to be more informed. And we have a bunch of our show links are on there. We do a show 3 times a week called Invisible In Courage. That's IN Courage. And that has a host of a wide range of people on, which is really informative, and talk about new technologies and different things that are going on in the disability space as far as experts in the field and personal testimonies. It's again, very encouraging program. And then if you're looking to join us for this summit, there are links, of course, on our website, but that's loveideas.org. And you could check that out and sign up. And again, if you tried to go to one of these summits, you know, it would be nothing to pay a couple $100 to just see one of these people. And we're going to have, you know, over 10 experts for the individual stuff. It's only $10. So we're thinking that's a pretty good deal for getting this many speakers and all the stuff that we're going to experience that week.
Going to be amazing. So you guys have heard it here. Super big, fun things happening in the world. And not only, it's already reward enough just to come and see all the people on there, and reward enough to be helping people with invisible disabilities, but add on to it that you may be part of a Guinness Book of World Records. So there you go. That makes it even more fun.
Yeah, how about it?
So I appreciate you so much for being on with us today. And to remind everyone, you've been listening to The Leverage Masters with Gina Gaudio Grace from Divisio, Queen of JV, and Andrea Adams Miller, international publicist and business consultant, the Red Carpet Connection, and executive director of the Keep Smiling Movement. And today we interviewed Jess Stainbrook with InvisibleDisabilities.org. Thank you so much, Jess, for joining me. I always learn so much from you and take so much value every time I get to share a mic with you. So thank you so much, and hopefully we'll get to meet in person someday.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for inviting me. It's always a joy to be with you guys.
All right, we'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll see you. Bye.
And we'll be on and we'll be on next week with Leverage Masters at noon Eastern Time. See you then.